This is episode 124 of Library of the Living Dead. You are welcome here.
Through the bloody sheet over the last body. More worthless refuse. God, it reeks. He pulled a silver snuff box from his waistcoat pocket and removed a liberal pinch, flinching as a mentholated powder hit the raw spot in his nose. When he'd first come to the Royal College of Physicians, the other doctors had said he would soon grow immune to the stench of decay, but the passage of 13 years had changed nothing. He stepped into the hall and found his assistant, Thomas. About time you returned. Get that vile abomination out of here. It's a miracle I was able to complete the last class. Thomas spilled the putrefied corpse into a burlap bag and wiped the table with the filthy sheet. At least we'll have fresh bodies in September for the next class, sir. Bloody rubbish! Executed criminals of family begging for the return of the bodies so they may give them a proper burial. And while there is no shortage of bounders in London, the demand is far higher. Even with the courts condemning them daily, there are not enough to go around. Just how many times can you dissect the same cadaver? Philip packed another pinch of snuff into his nose and thrust the box deep into his pocket. Thomas glanced around and found the hallway empty. You know, sir, it is said Michelangelo took bodies from the grave to study the human form. Surely we might find some degenerate in the pubs who would do most anything for a shilling? Philip studied his assistant's face but found no hint of humor. He drummed a long key in his palm as he pondered a moment. Perhaps, though, that is the best temporary solution, and no better than what we have now. If we are to train young surgeons, they need to practice on something that more closely resembles what they will experience when treating a living patient. These rotting corpses do not bleed. The limbs do not twitch or clench in pain. Many promising surgeons are lost the first time the slice of their scalpel brings gouts of blood and shrieks of agony. Philip locked the classroom door and dropped the key into his pocket. We need to find a way to preserve the body at the precise moment of death. If only it were possible to animate the corpse while allowing the spirit to pass, to maintain a living body without a soul. The students could study the flow of blood, observe the workings of the stomach, watch the healing process as their work allows. We would graduate the finest doctors in all of Europe. The two men walked in silence through Regent's Park, then into a small alehouse. Philip raised two fingers toward the barmaid as he claimed the table in the far corner. She scurried over with two tankards, then returned to the bar as the men sat down and loosened their ties. The dark corner offered a slight reprieve from the oppressive heat, but it was minimal at best. Thomas drained his pint in one draught and waved the girl over for a second round. We are, after all, men of science who have the next 10 weeks free. I would gladly do all I can to improve the study of our medicine. Perhaps together we can find a solution. I suggest we start with an arsenic mixture. It seems to have some interesting properties on tissue. Philip paused over his pint, then nodded slowly. Right you are. Who better to advance the field, eh? I'll cancel all my patients and send the maid on holiday. You find a body, or better still, a dying subject, and we can begin our research. With God's help, we may just change the course of history. He raised his glass, and Thomas joined him. To our success! 3 days later, they completed their first chemical concoction and were ready to test the formula. Philip met Thomas in the alehouse where their collaboration had begun. They were into their third pint when the filthy man approached. He removed his cap and bowed. Philip waved to the barmaid who brought three more pints to the table. Well, do you have something for us? Thomas drummed his fingers on the table while the stranger drained his pint in one long swallow.
Sorry, sir. It's thirsty work what it is, be caring what you asked and all. But just wait till you see him. A right big brute he is.
Philip leaned closer, trembling as he scanned the pub for over-anxious ears. Where is he?
Out back in me cart. I couldn't very well wheel him in here, now could I?
The stranger looked from Philip to his empty mug and winked.
Are you daft? On your feet, let's go.
Thomas grabbed the man by the arm, and Philip slipped the barmaid a pound note as the three men left the pub and hurried around to the side. In the back alley was a large wheelbarrow. A moth-eaten blanket covered the mounded contents, but an enormous bare foot protruded from the back. Thomas hurried to the cart and pushed the foot beneath the cover. The dirty man rocked on his heels, making no effort to hide his self-satisfaction with his delivery. Thomas clouted the man aside his head.
Bugger you! Grab those handles and get moving. We can talk once we're safely inside the doctor's surgery.
Philip was already moving swiftly down the alleyway. Thomas shoved the man forward, and soon they'd reached the rear entrance of Philip's building. Philip cast a quick glance along the alley, and satisfied they'd not been seen, he locked the door behind them and lit the gas lights. Philip pulled the blanket off and tossed it to the side. Inside the cart was a dead man, a very large dead man. He wore only a torn pair of trousers. His bare chest was the epitome of Grecian perfection, though it rose and fell no more. His hands were curled in a fist, and his knuckles were splashed with blood. Philip touched the face and gasped.
This man is still warm. How did you come by his body? I'll not pay a murderer.
All was easy, so it was. You see, there was a fight tonight down on the riverfront. This one here, well, he lost. Fell back into a brick wall and split his head, he did. Didn't have no friends akin to claim him, so I's carted him away.
What about the police? I'll not have you bring them to my door.
Philip paced about the room, glancing back and forth between the cart and the stranger.
Oh, no, no chance of that, sir. See, the fight went 'twant exactly legal, so to say. Once this one went down and didn't get back up, Everybody scattered like rats. Won't nobody be talking to the authorities, I can assure you, sir. Now, how about my fee? This one's a right fresh beauty, don't you think? I'd say he's worth at least 10 pounds.
He held out his hand.
Pah! This man's already dead. We cannot save him. 5 pounds and not a shilling more.
Philip threw the note at him.
Now off with you, and not a word of this to anyone. Right you are, then. You know where to find old Bill if you have need of me again.
He stopped and picked up the note and bowed. His broad grin fell to a scowl with realization his show of respect had gained him nothing. Thomas opened the door, then locked it again after Bill slipped into the night, huffing with indignation. Philip struggled with the body.
Come on, then. Help me get him on the table. I want to inject the formula right away. There's just the faintest trace of a pulse. We must hurry.
But you said...
No need in letting Bill wander. It's better if he thinks the man slipped away peacefully.
Together they managed to get the man on the table. Philip took the beaker of chemicals and filled a syringe with a thick, bluish fluid. He pushed the needle into the stovepipe vein running down the man's tattooed bicep, then depressed the plunger and stepped back. The doctors watched the man for 3 hours, hoping for some sign of animation, but there was no change in the body. Philip felt for the weak pulse, but it was gone. The skin was graying, and the flesh was cold.
Perhaps tomorrow we can try another formula. Maybe if we add a bit more silver nitrate and bloodroot to the mixture. I'm sure we're on the right track. The proportions must be just a bit off. Let's just get some rest.
Thomas took Philip by the arm and guided him toward the door that led into the parlor.
I suppose you're right, my friend.
Philip extinguished the lights. As he turned the doorknob, he heard the dead man moaning behind him in the darkness.
By God's grace, it worked!
Philip fumbled in his pocket for his tinderbox. The instrument tray crashed to the floor as the moaning intensified. Philip could hear clumsy, rustling sounds he knew meant the Hulk was moving.
Now you go on. Sit down, good sir. There's no need to make a fuss.
Thomas turned toward the table and trembled. The surgery echoed as the dead man took a halting step towards the doctor's, his massive arms outstretched. He was a blacker shape in the darkened room.
Don't waste your breath trying to reason with it, Thomas. It's a dead body. Guide it back to the table and restrain it while I get the lamps lit. What a glorious success! King Charles just might appoint me royal physician for this!
An implement from the wrecked tray rolled beneath his foot, causing Philip to slip and fall against the wall, knocking the glass lampshade to the floor.
But how do you expect me to restrain what I cannot see?
Thomas extended his arms and moved toward the table. He whimpered as his hands met the massive chest of the former fighter. The dead man groaned, bent his arms at the elbows, and raised his fists. He growled and punched, his gargantuan fist knocking Thomas to the floor. He raised both arms above his head in a victory pose, an odd, huffing wheeze exiting each pump of his arms.
What is going on? Thomas, what are you doing? There, I have it now.
Philip turned up the gas and the room filled with flickering light. He turned and saw Thomas lying on the floor, blood streaming from his shattered nose. The hulking corpse recoiled from the light but growled deep in its throat and raised its arms toward Philip. He took 2 steps forward before Philip rushed through the door and slammed the bolt shut on the other side. Philip collapsed and sat with his back against the door.
What on earth do I do now?
The corpse pounded on the door for 10 minutes that seemed more like hours. Philip cringed as the door shook with each blow of the massive fists. Then, the pounding stopped, leaving an oppressive silence. Philip took a monogrammed silk handkerchief from his pocket and rubbed his brow. He sat for several minutes with his ear against the door, straining to hear anything from within the surgery, though it remained silent. Scratching his head, he struggled to his feet, swaying as his knees tried to prevent the action. When he gained his balance, he retrieved a drinking glass from the buffet, placed it on the door, then held his ear to it. It fell from his hand and shattered at precisely the same moment his stomach rejected his evening meal and ale. He fell to his knees and covered his ears, but could not deny what he had heard. The sounds were wet and sloppy, punctuated by an occasional, satisfied grunt and belch. Philip groaned with a dawning realization the corpse was eating Thomas.
What do I do? How do I stop it when it's already dead? Oh, Thomas, I am so dreadfully sorry.
Philip paced for several minutes, then jumped back as he heard a loud crash from the surgery. He stood before the door and wrung his hands, listening for any further sounds. Hearing none, he cautiously opened the door and peeked inside. Thomas lay on the floor in a pool of blood. His right calf was gone, and only the thumb remained on his right hand. Philip slipped in the surgery, then gently lifted Thomas onto the table and crossed the arms so that the injured hand was covered. He looked at the outside door and saw the lower hinge was the only thing holding it crookedly in place. Philip returned to the table and closed Thomas's eyes.
I will be back to care for you, but first I must fix the door. Can't have anyone seeing this mess, you know.
It was oddly comforting to talk to his friend as if nothing horrific had happened. He went to the basement and returned with 3 stout boards, a hammer, and a tin of nails. He reset the upper hinge and nailed a board across the door about 18 inches from the floor. He was hammering the second board at waist level when Thomas began to moan.
Thomas, you're alive! I must have missed the pulse. It must have been too faint. No, don't you get up. You've lost a lot of blood. Lie down and let me take care of you.
He moved toward the surgical table as Thomas dropped heavily to the floor. Philip fell to his knees and took Thomas under the arm, helping him to stand. Thomas stared blankly ahead, moaning softly.
Yes, I know you must be in terrible pain. It's a good thing I trained under the likes of Dr. Harvey. Perhaps I can transfuse some of my own blood into you. That should help immensely. Should rebuild your strength. Oh, bugger, whatever are we going to do about the fighter?
Philip pushed Thomas under the table where he dropped with a thud.
Don't resist me like that. Relax. If I didn't know better, I'd think rigor mortis was setting in.
He rushed around, laying out a tray of needles and tubing and rolled up his sleeve. He moved back to Thomas and started unbuttoning the man's shirt. He pulled at the unyielding arm and managed to loosen the cuff. Thomas looked up, a brief flicker of recognition crossing his face, then slid away. He flopped upright, pushed Philip out of the way, then crossed to the door and forced his way through the small opening. The board at the bottom split like a stick of kindling. Tears ran down Philip's face. He stumbled to the door and began to nail it shut, muttering to himself as he worked, as if the sound of his own voice would somehow anchor his sanity.
I must do something. But what? I cannot admit this in any way was my fault. I wonder where they went.
When at last the door was secure, he collapsed on the floor and slipped into a deep, nightmare-filled sleep. St. Giles Tavern was full of the regular crowd, plus several seamen from a Dutch merchant ship. Mary Molly sashayed amongst the tables, looking for a man willing to buy her a drink and perhaps some of her time. She didn't have many regular customers, and the younger girls always had first choice. She had been at the fight earlier and knew a good fight got a man's blood running hot, and those who won big in the betting pool were often generous with their money. She spotted a table of sailors who'd been at the fight and slid into an empty chair.
Well now, who'd have thought that moose of a man would go down dead like that? Sure, and it was a disappointing fight. I hope you gents didn't lose any shillings tonight.
No more than we could afford, Mum. I'm Peter, and who might you be?
He poured her a glass of ale and leaned over to get a better view of her cleavage.
They call me Mary Molly, and mayhaps I can make up for the lack of entertainment earlier. I wouldn't want you to think that London has no hospitality.
She dropped her shoulder, allowing her blouse to slide lower and better display her wares.
That might be nice, Molly, but I can't leave my mates alone. Have you friends enough for all of us?
Peter gestured towards the other men sitting around the table.
Ah, now boys, don't you think Molly's enough woman for you all?
She raised an eyebrow and pursed her lips in a schoolgirl pout. The coquettish affection was grotesque on Molly long past her prime. The other men laughed and spoke to each other in Dutch.
Sorry, but my men say maybe next time. You better move along.
Peter reached out and pinched the nipple of her sagging breast as the others laughed even louder. Humiliated, Mary stomped out of the door and walked toward the docks. A large shadow blocked the moonlight from her path. She looked up and recognized the fighter who had fallen earlier.
Here now, look at you. We all thought you went down for the last time. I'll bet you look awful. Your whole face is bruised, blue. Come here, love, let Molly ease your pain.
She reached for his cold hand and led him into the alley. No one in the tavern heard her screams. When people started disappearing from the slums, there were many theories, from Shanghai pirates to bands of grave robbers who had decided to speed up the process of procurement. None of the theories held up when the missing citizens returned, though no longer living. Merchants closed their shops and upper class fled to the countryside. The walking dead feasted on the commoners, who then rose to search out their own sustenance. Philip gradually regained his composure, and at the end of June obtained an audience with King Charles. He had devised a plan to stop the undead without admitting his role in the creation of the problem. He paced, waiting to be announced. He took a deep breath as they called his name and he stepped forward. Your Majesty, I must tell you, the hysteria in St. Giles in the Fields is not the Black Death. Indeed, it is far worse than that. It is plague of another sort, of far more deadly.
And how do you come by this knowledge?
King Charles smoothed his robes, his gaze resting some 8 inches above Philip's head.
Though grievous to me, my own assistants succumbed to this horror. We were treating a man who had been injured on the docks. The poor unfortunate died on my examining table despite all our best efforts. He arose and killed Thomas and consumed large portions of his flesh. I watched as he disappeared into the night. Then, I thought I could hardly believe my own eyes. The ravaged corpse of my dearest friend rose and stumbled out of my sight.
Can you explain this? Perhaps some plot by Cromwell's sympathizers?
The king continued looking above Philip's head and waited for an answer.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty, I know not. All I know is the dead are killing your subjects and eating their flesh. Within hours, those maimed subjects rise and repeat the process. I've mathematically calculated the rate of contagion, so to say, and the poor living in the dock and warehouse districts, the lot of them, will be walking dead men by the end of August. If we do not stop them, they will move into the better districts in search of human flesh. If you will pardon my presumptuousness, I have a plan. Go on. However, do not waste our time. The boy stepped forward with a huge feathered fan and waved it over the throne. I think Your Majesty should go on holiday. Let the poor be rendered undead. We are on the cusp of a new age of enlightenment. You've been restored to your rightful throne and are ready to lead England into the future. Everyone believes this situation is merely another outbreak of Black Death, spread by rats and therefore more prevalent around the docks and slums. By the beginning of September, a mysterious fire could cleanse the problem permanently, and you could rebuild London. Christopher Wren did devise a plan for city improvements while working on the repairs to St. Paul's Cathedral. I recall something about a waste drainage system that would alleviate the odious smell carried on the wind from those areas. There may be a bit of merit to your plan. You would be seen as the savior of London, sire. Philip bent in a half bow. As this is your plan, I will have no part in carrying it forward. That is your decision and your responsibility. My duty will be rebuilding our glorious London and providing a safer city for my people. Go forth and serve us, loyal subject. The priest was changing the altar vestments. Incense burned in all four corners of the sanctuary, but only added a sickening herbal layer to the stench hanging in the air.
Good day to you, sir. I don't believe we've met. How may I serve you?
Philip extended his hand. Dr. Philip Cooper, Father. Pleased to meet you. The priest took Philip's hand and smiled.
I'm Father Thomas. What brings you here today?
Philip flinched as the image of Thomas limping down the alley on his mangled leg jumped unbidden to his mind.
I've been treating the poor unfortunate victims of the plague. Tell me, what do you think becomes of their souls?
The priest sat down in the first pew.
The soul is not released until the sufferer has died. Those afflicted seem neither alive nor dead. It's my belief that their souls are trapped in limbo until the body is put to rest.
Philip sat heavily beside the priest.
Then, if there's a way to stop the dead from walking, it would be a service to God to do it. A sacred duty, perhaps.
Well, yes, I suppose it would. But it seems no one knows how to stop it. It's in God's hands, and we are not to question him or his ways.
May I hear your confession and offer you absolution, son?
The priest inclined his head towards a confessional.
I'm sorry, Father, but I'm not Catholic. Is there any hope for my soul?
A single tear welled up in the corner of Philip's eye, reflecting in the candlelight across his cheeks.
If you have wronged anyone, go and make it right. When the city returns to normal again, come back to me and accept the faith. There's always hope for the truly penitent.
The priest rose and moved toward the incense braziers.
Thank you, Father.
Philip bowed and left the church, dropping a handful of coins in the poor box at the door. He stopped at a small pub and took a bottle of wine, leaving a pound note on the bar. In the next building, he found a wheel of cheese that still had about a third left, untainted by mold. He wrapped it in a linen cloth and dropped a few shillings on the table, then returned home. He sat at the table with the wine, cheese, and the Bible. For hours he read and drank until the sun went down. A humid breeze ruffled the curtains and carried in the piteous moans of the shambling dead. Each night over the last 3 months it had grown steadily louder, which could only mean that not only were the numbers of walking dead growing, they were also drawing closer to the better end of town. He threw the empty wine bottle out the window and dropped to his knees.
God, I'm so very sorry for my part in this epidemic. You know that my intentions were honorable. I only wished to educate my students and make them better physicians. Please, please give me a sign that I may know your will. Tell me when it is time to cleanse the abomination. You promised never again to cleanse by flood, but the next time by fire. Your willing servant awaits your command. Speak, and I will light the pyre.
Philip continued to pray until he collapsed into an exhausted sleep. 3 nights later, he saw the sign in the sky. Philip arose on September 2nd and walked to St. Paul's looking for Father Thomas. He went inside but could not find the priest. The incense burners were cold, the candles were unlit, and the air was stale. He searched the sanctuary and found a small office in the back.
Father, are you here?
Philip stepped into the small room and gasped as he looked around. Blood pooled on the floor, and there were bloody handprints of varying sizes on the windowsill. Glittering shards of glass sparkled in the clotting mess. A huge Bible sat on a small desk, its chair toppled over. The book was open, though the passage was unreadable through the gore splattered over the pages. Philip slammed the door shut and threw the bolt. He righted the chair, sat at the desk, and bowed his head. "Father God, forgive me for the loss of this man, your most humble servant. He must have been studying here and was taken by the dead. Is it not now time to end this plague? I still await your sign. Please, hear my unworthy prayer, I beseech thee." He opened a small cabinet and found a decanter of communion wine, a gold cross adorned with jewels in the bottle. He removed his shirt and with great care cleaned the Bible as best he could. He read and drank, oblivious to the passage of time until he passed out. The sun went down and the morning rose, filling the night, waxing and waning in grotesque union. Philip roused and looked out the window. Animated corpses filled the alley, shambling and moaning. A starving dog lay cowering against the wall, too weak to run. The dead tore it apart. In their frenzy, they attacked each other, biting any bit of flesh that was splashed with the warmth of the poor dog's blood. Philip sobbed and covered his ears, but nothing could block out the sounds. In desperation, he turned again to prayer. "Dear Lord, have mercy! What am I to do? There are thousands of them now! Lord, please send me a sign, I beg you! How much longer can the world endure this?" Suddenly the window filled with a brilliant light. Philip rushed to the window and looked up into the midnight sky. A blazing comet shot across the sky, raining embers down over the milling dead. They showed no reaction even as their clothing began to smolder. Philip clapped his hands and shouted, "Yes! Yes, praise Almighty! It is time to end the abomination!" In the distance he saw flames and thick black smoke. Deep elongated wails echoed through the night. The moaning rose in intensity and was carried on the acrid, smoky wind. Philip rummaged through the church and found several decanters of brandy. He spent the hours until dawn tearing cleaning rags into strips and winding them around the ends of every mop and broom he could find. He soaked the tips in the brandy, and as the sun rose, he lit a handmade torch and left the church. He walked along, setting fire to the thatched roofs. A corpse shuffled toward him and he set the torch to its close. It recoiled back a step, but made no attempt to put out the flames. It changed direction and shambled on. Philip stayed well away from Pudding Lane, where the heart of the fire raged. A few unwitting do-gooders were already trying to douse the flames, and the walking dead moved outward to attack the hapless firefighters. Philip hoped to spread the fire far enough to consume them all, and mumbled a prayer for the innocent fools who he caught in the sacrifice. He circled back to St. Paul's well before the sunset, his torch now cold. He returned to the tiny office where a new supply of torches waited, soaking in a baptismal fount he'd filled with brandy. The moaning intensified and he looked out the window. The alley was packed with ambling corpses. He lit the rags on the end of the broom and extended it out the window. He jabbed at a fat washerwoman in the chest and her apron erupted in flame. She staggered backward and fell into a young boy in a sailor's uniform. The once white shirt was caked in gore, but slowly caught fire. Philip laughed with hysteria as he jabbed and managed to set a fire to a chimney sweep's hat. The flaming corpses moved away from the window, and slowly the others began to follow. "I almost think they understand their inherent danger. Perhaps Father Thomas and I were wrong. The soul is neither departed nor is it held in limbo. It would seem that it is merely suppressed beneath the base survival intellect. Almost a pity not to study this phenomenon." Philip climbed to the top of the bell tower and slept. At dawn he set out again with a torch and started as many fires as he could. The fire still raged in Pudding Lane, and he could only assume the corpses had defeated the firefighters, thereby swelling their own ranks. At dusk, he returned once more to the church. The fire was now burning out of control and had reached the cathedral. The wooden scaffolding outside from the restoration work begun in the spring had caught fire. Tongues of flame licked up toward the roof, and flaming ash rained down from the sky. Philip hurried to the front courtyard. "If I can make it to the lower crypts, I'll be safe until dawn, for I must see God's will fulfilled." His hand was on the door when he heard shuffling footsteps and soft moans behind his back. He turned and was face to face with a rank of burning corpses. His eyes lit with joy as he recognized the two closest bodies, and the last shred of sanity fled his mind.
"Thomas, my dear friend, you've survived! And Father Thomas as well! I thought you both dead! I welcome your help in ending this contagion. Now that you are here, surely God will grant peace to these poor unfortunates."
Philip opened the cathedral door and stepped inside. He spread his arms and embraced his former assistant, oblivious to the missing flesh and expressionless eyes. The priest shuffled forward, the hem of his cassock smoldering while Thomas tore a chunk from Philip's face, offered freely for a kiss. Slowly, the burning horde entered the sanctuary, and by dawn the cathedral was in ruins, the shambling dead consumed by the hungry flames. History would show a tragic conflagration begun as a mysterious comet that devastated London, and King Charles would be praised for success in rebuilding the city. After all, a sovereign should never speak of unholy matters, and there was no one else alive who knew the truth.
Eight or nine zombies wandering outside the gate. Send a unit out there, please. Tell them to eliminate them. Tell them not to cause a stir. Don't want to attract one more. Please don't take it lightly. You never know it's zombies.
Exponential Potential by Mike Mitchell. Jensen shook himself awake from a nightmare. The quasi-comforting beep, beep, beep of the neighboring patient's heart monitor told him he was back in the hospital and not in the twisted wreckage that put him there. He could still hear the shatter of glass and screaming of twisted metal from the motorcycle as it slammed itself into the highway guardrail. He could still feel the concrete as he slammed into the ground at approximately 60 miles an hour, and the snap of his back as it broke in two. He could even feel the pain in his legs, even though he knew that was impossible. The doctor had said it was something like the phantom limb syndrome that amputees feel years later after the limb was severed from the body. Paralyzed. Jensen was paralyzed from the waist down, and he knew that it was not going to get any better. The doctors and nurses had been in and out all day long, taking readings, poking, prodding, and just being pretty medicinal. However, the last few hours, no one had come to see him. The ER seemed to be getting insanely busy. Some kind of sickness. Jensen could see the line of patients outside his door, waiting to be seen. The bright light of the ER lobby contrasting against the darkened room. He glanced at the bedside clock. 2 in the morning. What the hell was going on that this place was so overcrowded? He lay back and sighed deeply. Nothing he could do. Can't even take a pee by myself. He stared out the small window as a doctor, covered in blood, ran past, shouting about something he didn't understand. He heard a slam and a scream from a woman. What the hell was going on out there? Maybe some kind of big wreck? Jensen shuddered as the thought crossed his mind. The door creaked open slowly as the doctor's silhouette entered the doorway. A man stood in the doorway wearing a lab coat with a stethoscope dangling from his neck. Jensen couldn't make out his features and wasn't sure if it was the same doctor that had been attending him tonight. Doc? What's going on out there? The doctor's form stood silent. Hey, Doc! What's up out there? Sounds like World War III. The doctor looked at Jensen and made a short grunt and stepped forward to the foot of the bed. I've got that phantom limb thing going on, Doc. Can you give me anything to sleep? The doctor's form lifted his sheet to look at his leg and bent close. Jensen could feel a tugging as the doctor pulled on his leg and heard a wet, sloppy noise. The head jerked, and Jensen saw something dangling from his jaws, but he felt no pain.
Octopus's manic minute movie mutilation. Octopus's manic minute movie mutilation. Octopus's manic minute movie mutilation. Here we go, we start right now, there'll be no hesitation.
Octopus's manic minute movie mutilation, in which we peruse the incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed up zombies. That's right, good folks. That one. The doctor is him.
This little low-budget flick had a great deal of charm and is tons of fun to watch. This is not a so-called so-bad-it's-good variety of film. Like Plan 9 from Outer Space. You remember that stinker, don't you? It's not bad cinema, unless you're the kind of viewer who enjoys such middle-brow slop as Titanic and The English Patient. It's quirky, perverse, creative, entertaining. Furthermore, the photography is excellento, which should come as no surprise. The cinematographer went on to write a classic instructional book on cinematography for film students. So, if you're looking for a surprise, if you're looking for something offbeat, and if John Sayles films make you want to regurgitate all over the place, blah, then place this one on your rental queue. Or better yet, buy it.
The doctor is sitting here, wondering if he can boogaloo like they do in the movie. And the doctor is out.
I could rise with all the undead. The hunger is in my head, a hunting in the rain. And my teeth, I'd be snapping while the feeding frenzy's happening if I only eat your brain. I'd unravel all intestines, see where the liver's resting, and you'd be in some pain. With the thoughts, you'd be screaming, you'd hope you're only dreaming if I only eat your brain. Oh, I could tell you why you're all gonna rise. I could tell you about infection's next surprise, and then I'd sit and eat your eyes. I would not be just a shambler, I'd be a munching rambler, my body has no pain. I would stalk and be scary, and my tongue would be all hairy if I only eat your brain.
The Zombie Series,
the Zombie Series.
By Brad Z.
Brad Z.
Brad Z.
Brad Z.
Brad Z.
Brad Z.
The Zombie Series. Post 1. Letter Day. Well, crap. Got the letter delivered to me today by a member of the council. Yes, that letter. Nothing makes your Monday more fun than finding out there are a few more people inside the wall than needed, and you are the lucky winner of the lottery and get to make the 5K zombie run. Lovely. Oh well, the zombies didn't get me before, so I'm going to stick with them not getting me this time. Beats the odds of surviving the firing squad for failing to comply with receiving the letter from the council. Okay. It really wasn't a member of the council delivering me this great news, unless they are now filling the seats with these scrawny kids who have never been outside the wall before. Somehow, I think that his name might not come up to receive the glorious honor of trying to dodge zombies better than the other people. Most likely, he was just an intern, though. Somebody who got their kid a nice, cushy job, but he was accompanied by two members of the Marksman Militia. Guess they got bored and decided to come down from the safety of the wall for a bit of a walk around with this kid. Now, don't get me wrong, I applaud them for the job that the marksmen do, but these are guys that never get their hands dirty. Nothing like the safety of sitting up on the wall and taking out a target a few hundred yards away from where you are with a nice sniper rifle and a hot cup of coffee. There's a reason why those guys never leave that unit until they are forced out because of their age. Of course, I saw their smirks when the intern kid ran through my history and mentioned I was a past ZWAT member. Granted, that was almost 20 years ago, but some things never change, and that includes a rivalry between the Marksman Militia and the Zombie Weapons and Tactics Division. Not every zombie can be taken out with a long-range bullet, though. There is a requirement for somebody to go down there and take them on hand-to-hand. That's where we came in. Of course, that was back when the wall was being built to keep everything out and those inside safe, or at least safer than it was outside the wall. Back then, there were almost as many people in the ZWAT as there were inside the wall. We did have a high rate of attrition at that point, mind you. We were all, how would you say it, expendable. Still, I was fine with it since we at least got the good food. Well, that was until the wall was completed, of course. They didn't disband our unit, though. They just reduced the number of people in it since we didn't have to protect the outside of the wall as it was being constructed anymore. The small amount of those that got the chance to stay are still roaming the streets and responding to emergencies when someone dies, then comes back to take a bite out of somebody else. The rest of us that got discharged got placed into positions inside the wall. Somehow, I ended up working in a cubicle. Still not really sure how that happened. Not sure why I'm reminiscing about this stuff now. My number came up, so time to get back in shape, or I'm never going to make it to the end of that 5K alive. Hey, I'm Brad Zippers, the author and narrator of this fictional account of life some 20 years after the zombie uprising. It is based off running challenges that I do in real life. Lucky for you, the internet does somewhat work in the apocalypse, so you can read the posts and see the pictures mentioned in the series. Just head on over to thezombieseries.com to check that out. Feel free to drop a note there or become a survivor and join in the story by leaving your comments. Thanks for listening.
I don't know how to eat them. What to do, how to chew flesh. I've been changed, yes, really changed. In these past few years, my teeth are gone and dentures aren't the same. I don't know where they went to. I've just got these gums. Now it's lovely flesh, a tasty flesh. But without my choppers, I'm sure screwed in oh so many ways. I want to eat. Should I gum the arm? Could I do some harm? Can I tear and rend on his torso's end? Try to suck the meat. I never thought I'd come to this. What's this all about? My groans of hunger just to shout, I'm the one who's gonna be ever looking and quite hungry, so wild, so dead, ever slow, it scares me so. Will I waste away no more undead days, never more to eat but discarded feet? Am I just resigned to eating scraps from the zombie stew? I don't know how to eat them, what to do, how to chew flesh. I've been changed, yes, really changed. In these past few years, my teeth are gone and dentures aren't the same. Oral-B's to blame, Oral-B's to blame, Oral-B's to
Well, I hope you got as much out of the last interview as I did. Professor Hail Mary sure did bring up some interesting points regarding Earth's recent pass through what some have nicknamed the Green Cloud, which happened just over 2 days ago, as we all know. This has been a huge topic for us in the past few months, with more guests and their theories coming to join us during that time. Now that we have passed through it and nothing has happened, just like I and many others predicted, I'm wondering now what the next big topic will be. My guess? There will still be some strangeness this weekend with all the energy that the people built up that needs to be released. I'm sure the full moon out there tonight is just helping fuel it as well. In fact, I have something right here that just came over the wire to that effect. From what it says, it looks like there is some sort of disturbance happening in upstate New York. It appears that the National Guard has been called out, but that is all the information we have. My guess, it's some sort of drill. The military has been ramping up for whatever might happen after we went through the cloud, and now that there haven't been any reports of world doom, I guess they needed something to do. If you're listening to us through an affiliate in that area, though, and have an eyewitness account to what is going on up there, give us a call. I'm just as curious as the rest of our listeners are. On that note, we're going to take a break here for a few minutes while we try to get our next guest on the line. So sit tight, and I'll be back for another stunning hour of Hunt Through the Night.
Hey, Ted, I can't get a hold of the Jackson guy. There's no phone service in his area right now for some reason.
Well, I guess we're just going to have to try some open lines. Not much else we can do. Sending you a copy of his email. Make sure you have the right number and try to call him back again, okay, Phil? Maybe you'll luck out and get him. I talked to him earlier today and the number worked fine.
He wasn't in New York, was he?
He's in Ohio. Sorry to ruin your conspiracy theory on that one, Phil. I must say, though, I'm just as curious about this New York thing. Not every day they call out the guard. Could be since they had them all prepped anyhow, somebody decided to do something with them just to justify the expense. See if you can pull up anything else on this. How much longer?
35 seconds.
Have you noticed any issues with the net running insanely slow tonight? I'm not going to get anything by the time we get back on.
Yes, and I'll look into it. In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome back to Hunt Through the Night. I am your host, Ted Hunt, and I am glad you could be with us tonight. So I'm interested to hear how things are going in your area of the woods. It seems that we have some unrest on the East Coast going on, but neither Phil nor I have been able to come up with anything else, as we seem to be having some issues with our internet connection here in the studio. So all you East Coasters out there, let us know what's happening. Everyone else, feel free to call in as well and let us know what's on your mind. Let me tell you, things have seemed a little strange here in Chicago as well. Now, it might have something to do with the full moon or the dust cloud, or maybe all this is just a combination with being a Saturday night. Who knows? But I do hear more sirens on the way in the studio tonight than I did last night. Here in the studio, though, it's just another Saturday night episode. This coming hour, we were supposed to have a guest that I know you all would have loved to have heard from, but as of the break, we have been unable to contact him. Phil, you made any progress yet?
Sorry, still unable to get through.
Well, keep trying. Maybe we can get him on later. But for now, we will be taking your calls. First up, we have Karen from Tennessee.
Hello, Ted. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Karen. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to call in to say that we have quite a few sirens going off here in Tennessee tonight as well.
More than you usually hear, Karen?
I'm not sure, Ted. Maybe it's just tonight and everyone was on edge as it was. Or maybe it's just that I'm noticing them more than usual since you mentioned hearing them there also.
Is that a siren we hear right now?
Why, yes, it is. It just passed my house and is going down to the end of the block.
Can you see what's going on there, Karen?
No, Ted, not from where I am right now.
Well, Karen, keep a lookout for anything strange then and call us back if you see anything, all right?
I'll do that, Ted. You don't think all this is connected, or am I just getting paranoid for no reason?
That's hard to say, Karen. I think it's just a coincidence, but you stay safe. Okay, next up is Steve in Ohio. Go ahead, Steve. You're on Hunt Through the Night.
Hey, Ted. First off, I would just like to give you a big thank you for all you do. You help keep me occupied as I drive through the night.
Ah, thank you very much, Steve. Driving through the night. You a trucker, then?
Yes, sir. Been hauling for a little over 10 years now.
What are you hauling tonight, Steve?
Delivering a load of cattle up north.
Keep those farms going for us, Steve. It's people like you who put in the hard work to keep this country going. What do you have for us tonight?
Well, Ted, I'm currently heading up I-75.
I've been up that road a few times myself in the past. We're about on I-75.
Coming up on Lima right now, but this happened about an hour ago after I came through Dayton and stopped for a break.
What did you see?
Well, I was heading out of the stop, then had to wait while a very long convoy of army trucks passed.
Was this on the highway?
No, it was on a side road that I had to take to get back on the highway. Anyhow, there were at least 50 of these trucks that I had to wait on before I could turn. Maybe more than that, even.
What type of trucks did you see?
It was a mixture of Hummers and troop carriers. Nothing too out of the ordinary, but there was one thing that really creeped me out.
What's that, Steve?
For one, it looked like they had guns mounted on the Hummers. But the part that got me was every soldier I saw had on a gas mask, and a few looked like they were wearing some sort of protection suit.
Full body suits and face masks?
Most of the soldiers just had on gas masks, Ted. But there were a few trucks that passed by, and those people had on what looked like those big body suits.
That does sound weird. Have you any ideas what's going on or where they're going?
I'm not sure. After they passed, I got on the road and hit the highway. I could still see their headlights. For a while, though, the road they had taken ran almost parallel to I-75, but it wasn't much later that I lost track of them.
Makes you wonder what they're up to, doesn't it, Steve? Especially after hearing the information we just gave out at the top of the hour about the National Guard being called up to upstate New York.
Yeah, you're telling me. Now, it looks like traffic is coming to a stop up ahead of me as well. Strange night indeed. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, you take care out there, Steve, and keep listening as you deliver your items through this great country of ours. Have a new caller up next. You're on Hunt Through the Night. Take it away, Kevin.
Am I on?
You're live on the air, Kevin. What do you have for us?
Thanks, Ted. I've been listening to your show for the last 4 years, and tonight's the first time I've called in.
Well, thanks for listening, Kevin. What's wrong? You sound nervous or upset.
Well, I'm a little shaken up right now.
Why is that, Kevin?
I was just coming home tonight. I live just a bit outside of town, so there wasn't many other cars on the road at this time. And I saw something that, well, oh my God, Ted, it was horrible.
What was it? What did you see that was so bad, Kevin?
Well, at first I thought it was a trick of the light within the moon shining through the trees and all, but now I'm not quite sure. I do know that I don't want to go back and look. It was when I saw the car along the side of the road that I stopped. You don't normally see cars out this way, so I figured they broke down. When I pulled up next to the car, I...
Take your time, Kevin.
There was something in the car eating the driver.
What do you mean, eating the driver?
I pulled up, and there was this woman, I think, that was biting into the guy's neck. For a minute, I thought they might have been making out, but then she pulled her head back. Oh my God, it was horrible. And there was a chunk of skin hanging from her mouth and blood all over. Her face was covered in blood, and half of her face looked like it was torn off.
You're not messing around with us, are you, Kevin?
I wish I was, Ted. I wish with everything I have that I could unsee what I saw tonight.
Did you call the cops, Kevin?
I tried as soon as I got home, but they weren't answering the phone. I called 911, and they didn't believe me, but they said they would get someone from the local office out here. I don't know how they're going to do that if they won't answer the phone for me. I think they're the Walking Dead.
Why do you say that, Kevin? Are you sure it wasn't some college kids playing a prank on you?
I hope it was. There was another one that came up on my side of the car and tried to get in. He didn't look like the girl in the car. His skin was dark, and all I could see was his teeth as he bit at the window. Even with the window up, the smell was unbelievable. If it hadn't been for the tux he was wearing, then I...
Kevin, you there? Well, it looks like we lost Kevin. How about that? So do you think he saw the Walking Dead, or was he just pulling our leg? It's hard to say since we lost him. Looks like the strange things going on tonight are affecting all of us. There have been some strange things going on tonight, that is for sure. Well, folks, we have to take a short break, but hang in there and we will be back to take more of your calls. You're listening to Hunt Through the Night. What in the hell was that last call, Phil?
I have no idea. Probably just another drunk calling, but there's some weird crap jumping up on the radar recently. I do hope he was just making that up.
What is going on? Is the net working yet?
No, got some stuff via fax, though, that I scanned over to your internal email. Whole section of New York has been quarantined where the National Guard was heading. Not getting any reports why, but there also appears to be some sort of protest happening in Georgia and Indiana. Military is being called out there as well.
Jesus. Why does all this go down when we can't get on the web and find anything out?
You're on intent and the banks are full.
Gotcha. I mean, we want calls from people in the areas of interest.
Roger. 3-2.
Welcome back to Hunt Through the Night. I am your host, Ted Hunt, and we are ready to take your calls. Before we do that, though, it appears that the military has been called out to a few places around the nation. Georgia and Indiana are the recent ones that I have just heard of, but we don't know why. From what we understand, upstate New York is in quarantine. We're not exactly positive where this quarantine is taking place. Unfortunately, we are unable to find out any information through the internet as it appears that we'd be down in our area. So, with that said, if you live in those areas where something is going on with the military, give us a call and let the rest of the nation know what is happening. We need you to be our eyes and tell us what you see. Robin, you are on the air, so take it away.
scared.
What's going on, Robin? We are here with you.
Well, I have sirens going off here as well, and I've encountered over a dozen police cars speed by my house in the last 30 minutes.
Where are you, Robin?
Eugene, Oregon. The TV went out an hour ago along with the internet. The power flipped just a little bit ago, and I just started hearing gunshots.
Can you tell us where the gunshots are coming from, Robin?
It sounds like they're coming from down the street. What should I do, Ted?
Have you locked your doors and are you someplace safe, Robin?
Yeah, I have all the doors locked and I'm upstairs in my bedroom. I'm looking out the window.
Turn your lights off, Robin. We don't need anybody seeing you up there if you're hearing shots.
Yeah, that was it. Okay, the lights are off.
Was that gunfire I just heard?
Oh, Ted, I'm getting really scared. The gunfire's getting closer and I hear people yelling now.
What is...
Oh my God!
What was that, Robin?
A cop car just went racing by and slammed in my neighbor's car.
Can you tell if anybody is hurt? Bill is trying to call the police in your town right now to tell them what you are seeing.
Well, there's some people walking strangely toward the car right now.
What do you mean strangely, Robin?
They're walking really slow. Oh, good. Ben just came out to help.
Who's Ben?
He's my neighbor. Oh my God, they're attacking him! No! Ben, what's going on? Oh, God, no. Someone just got out of the cop car and is shooting at the people attacking Ben, but they're not stopping. Oh, Ben. Why? Ted, why? Oh no, there's more of them coming up the...
Robin, are you there?
The line went dead.
If any of you are in Eugene, Oregon, keep a lookout. I'm not sure what's going on there, but it doesn't sound good. Why doesn't everybody say a quick little prayer for Robin and anyone else who might be involved in whatever is going on tonight?
I was unable to get a hold of the police or 911 dispatchers in her area either. Kept getting all lines are busy.
I'm still trying to pull up the few websites on the internet to get a better grip on things, but I'm not having any luck connecting still.
Ted, there's a statement from Homeland Security that just came in and you need to see. Just scanned it over to you.
Thanks, Phil. I'm pulling this up right now, folks, in just a second. Oh my. Okay, folks, from what it says here, well, let me just read this first part for you. By order of the President of the United States, an order of martial law has been declared across every state in the Union. National, regional, and local law enforcement agencies are to assist in the maintaining control of the public during this terrorist attack that is currently spreading across the nation. The President is en route to her command center and will be making a statement once more is known about this attack. My God, we have gone from quarantine in New York to this in less than half an hour. What is going on out there? If anybody out there is listening happens to be in law enforcement branch or military and can call in and give us more information, call the hotline at 555-242-0915 and Phil will get you right over to us. All we can do here is press on, so Brian, you're up.
This is all a trick, Ted. The government is just trying to take us over, and martial law is the way they are going to do it. They've been planning this for years, and it was only a matter of time. The signs have been there, and we must fight against them, or else we are going to be enslaved with the rest of the world as the real people who run the secret government makes their play for power. I encourage everyone to take up their right to bear arms and stand and protect yourselves.
Brian, I'm not sure that this is the government trying to take over the nation, but martial law does pose a question on what is going on.
That's how they're planning it, taking out those who...
Brian, did you hear the call from Robin? That did not sound like the secret government trying to take over.
That's what they want you to believe, Ted. That is how they're going to take out those who...
Okay, sorry, folks. I'm just not in the mood for conspiracy theories at the moment. I'm not sure what is going on out there, but the TVs here in the studio now have the Emergency Broadcast Network message on, telling everybody to stay in their homes and not to leave. Probably good thing, since most people are sleeping at this time of night anyhow. We are going to keep on broadcasting, though, folks, and skip the commercial breaks until we figure out what is going on. If the station wants to bill me for the advertising fees, then feel free. Phil has somebody on the hotline, so let's get to them. Go ahead, caller. You're on Hunt Through the Night.
Am I on?
Yes, you are on Hunt Through the Night. What do you do, and what can you tell us?
My name is Dr. Margaret Seiler, and I'm from Riverbend Hospital in Baton Rouge, and I've had firsthand experience with what's going on here. I have to tell you, it's not terrorism like they're saying. A military unit has shown up and they are taking control of the hospital. So I have to be quick before they catch me.
What is going on, Doctor?
It started here almost an hour ago and it has been spreading fast. I can't believe what I've seen. It Well, the best way, no, the only way I could put it is that the dead are coming back to life again.
You can't be serious.
I wish I was lying. The first patient, he came in almost an hour ago. Danny Bishop was his name. I went to school with him and we dated a little bit, even in high school. He was a cop who was out on a disturbance call and was bitten by the suspect.
Bitten? How bad was the bite, Dr. Seiler?
It was a bad bite, but not life-threatening in any way. The suspect took a huge chunk of Danny's arm, but somehow managed not to hit any of the arteries. He should have been fine, but within 10 minutes of arriving, he went into cardiac arrest and there was nothing I could do to bring him back.
That's horrible.
Yeah, but we didn't have much time to figure out why he died so quickly. I had just turned around and was walking out of the room to call Danny's wife when I heard the screams. I had turned around just in time to see Danny forcing Becky to the ground as blood flowed out of her neck and onto the floor. Sarah was beating on his back, but he wasn't responding to her, and he was only chewing on Becky's neck. I just stood there. I couldn't move. I mean, here was my friend, one of my friends killing someone right in front of me after he died on the table in front of me. This shouldn't have been happening. Then he attacked Sarah.
What happened to them? Are they all right?
No. He killed them both, and then I stabbed them through the chest with an IV pole, but it didn't do anything to him.
I'm sorry, Dr. Seiler. You stabbed him with the pole and nothing happened? That didn't kill him?
Danny was already dead, and then he came back to life, Ted. Even though I rammed an IV pole through his chest cavity, which would have killed any living person, it didn't bother him at all. He just kept trying to get to me, and those eyes, they had no feeling, no life left in them.
What happened next, Doctor?
He was dead and walking, just like the rest of them. If it wasn't for the military showing up, well, they helped stop some of them before they...
Hey! What are you doing on that phone? All cell phones are supposed to be turned in right now.
You can't treat us this way. I have rights.
There's more coming in. The strike's been called.
It appears we have lost a doctor. I'm not really sure what to think about that last call. Any of it, really. What she said or what we just heard at the end there.
I can't get her back, Ted. Just getting a message saying the customer we're calling isn't available.
If you're listening to this broadcast, I assure you this is not a hoax. Please do the best you can to secure yourselves and your loved ones somehow. I would advise against going out on the streets at this time, if at all possible. We will pass on more information as it comes in, but as of right now, we do know that martial law has been put into place by the President of the United States. We have yet to hear from her, but hopefully more information will come out soon. As far as I can tell from the past calls, it appears that either the dead are coming back to life, or that there is a virus that is severely affecting people. Whether this is either a result of a terrorist attack or a result of the Earth passing through the green cloud is unknown at this time. We have another caller online, so let's get to them. Go ahead, Roger in Georgia.
They killed my wife, Ted.
Who killed your wife, Roger?
We stopped to get gas, and while I was pumping, she went to the store, then I heard her screaming. There was blood everywhere, and this group of people were clawing at her. They smelled so bad, and there was bleeding everywhere.
Oh, Roger, I'm so sorry.
She was looking at me when I ran into the door. They were eating her, Ted. Eating her. I managed to kick two of them off and grab the last one. His arm broke right off into my hands. He was decomposing. He didn't have any eyes. How could he walk around without any eyes?
I don't know, Roger. I don't know. What happened to your wife?
I grabbed her, and she was able to walk a little, so we made it back to the car. There were more of them coming towards us. I swear it looked like they were coming from the cemetery. How is that possible?
Where are you now, Roger? Where's your wife?
We got in the car and got away from there before I stopped again. She was bleeding everywhere, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. Breathing was slowing, and she was trying to speak, but they'd bitten to her throat so she couldn't talk. When she stopped breathing, I just held her. There was nothing I could do. Nothing! I didn't want to hit her, but she woke up and she bit me. I tried to get her to stop, but she wouldn't listen. She wouldn't listen to me, so she just kept reaching for me, and so I struggled out of her arms and got out of the car. No matter what I said, she wouldn't stop. When she got out of the car, she staggered towards me. She wouldn't stop. I didn't want to hit her, but she wouldn't stop. Why wouldn't she stop? I loved her so much.
I'm so sorry, Roger. What did you have to do to make her stop?
I found a tree branch and tried to keep her back with that. I thought she would wake up if I hit her with it a little, but she just kept coming and I fell into a ditch. Next thing I remember, I was rattling her on the ground and hitting her head with a rock. Her face was gone. I loved her so much. I came back to the car to get help. I'm not feeling so good now. I've been sitting here listening to your show for the last 15 minutes now and heard the doctor talking. I know I'm not going to make it much longer. I just want to say that I love my wife and I'll see you soon, honey.
Roger, we are saying a prayer for you. It's not often I get at a loss for words, but tonight is one of them. It appears our worst nightmares are coming true. The dead are walking near Earth. Why is this happening? I don't know. Whatever you do, though, please stay in your home and do not go near any deceased family members or friends that might be in your presence. Phil just put through another call, so Paul in Texas, what can you tell us?
Hey, Ted, first time caller, but I've been a listener for quite a long time. Tonight sure is screwed up, ain't it?
That it is, Paul. That it is. What do you have for us tonight?
We've been out putting down these, zombies is the best name for them, and for the last hour or so, a couple of the boys showed up at my house, and we loaded up the trucks. Zach's brother is the sheriff, and he deputized us all to help out.
Tell us what's going on there, Paul.
We've been riding back and forth between the cemeteries, taking out any of the stragglers that may have made their way to the surface.
Stragglers?
Yep, takes one of them longer to get up to the surface than the others.
You mean the dead are clawing their way up from their graves?
Sure do. Not all of them, though. There are quite a few of them just making it to the surface. No idea how, but when they do, we just put them down so things don't get more out of hand than what we already have.
How are you putting them down, Paul? Is this affecting anyone else in your town as well?
That's why I wanted to call in. See, Zach's brother Steve tried to get us additional help, military, but seems our issues ain't bad as some of them other places, so they said we's on our own. That's when Steve put the call out. Seems this all started a few hours ago in the morgue, but has gotten worse lately, so we got us a few more of them showing up and some people who've been infected by them, and, the only way we found to put them down and keep them down is a good bullet to the brain. Of course, if you don't have a gun, you can club them in the head or whatever, as long as you destroy the brain.
You're shooting them in the head and killing them?
Nah, we ain't killing them, Ted. They're already dead. Oh, we're just reminding them of that. You can tell most of them are. They corpses, after all. Hell, most of them you can smell long before you see them, though. There are some, though, that are hard to tell, and those are the recent ones. Only good part of them is that they can't move very fast, so you can outrun them, any that come in contact with you, unless you're surrounded by, I guess. They want to bite you, but you don't want to let them do that.
Because then you'll be infected, right, Paul? We had a doctor call in previously who indicated that would happen.
Worse than that, you'll die a painful death, and then after your heart stops beating, you'll reanimate and start hunting for the living. Then I'll have to shoot you.
I take it you've seen this happen then, Paul.
Sorta. The mortician is the first one that got bit in town. Seems one of the stiffs he was working on decided they wanted to get back up. Short story on that, he managed to call the cops, and out of that four that went out there, only one's left alive. The others, they done got bitten and turned. I didn't see any of them after they got turned, but I have seen a few people I used to know. A word of warning, everyone out there, just because they might look like your neighbor or friend or family even, if they ain't talking to you and you're trying to bite you, then you need to put them down. It's you or them. Okay, Ted, I have to go. We have some business here to take care of.
Thanks for calling in and sharing that with us, Paul. You be safe out there. If you would be asking me this morning if I thought I would be telling people to shoot the dead in the head, I might have taken you to a hospital for a checkup. There hasn't been any news release on this yet, but if we just go by what our past callers have said, then the dead are now walking the earth. Hopefully this isn't happening in your area, but I fear it just might get there, and the best we can do is protect ourselves and our loved ones. If you happen to get bit by one of these things, well, God help you then. We are going into lockdown here in the studio, so we are going to keep broadcasting and taking your calls for as long as we can stay on the air. Hopefully this will get the information needed out to you so we can overcome this horrible atrocity that is affecting us. We're going to take a short break, though, and I'll be right back. I am Ted Hunt, and you are listening to Hunt Through the Night.
You're clear for 4 minutes, so head over to the window and have a look. You're not going to like it.
My God, they're everywhere.
It sounds like someone is at the door. You expecting anyone?
No, but check and see anyhow. Might be someone with some useful information. Bill! For those of you out there who are trying to make it through tonight, I am Ted Hunt, and you are listening to Hunt Through the Night. I'm going solo from here on out, and I'll try to stay on the air for as long as I can. Things are starting to look a little grim around the studio, I'm sad to say. During our break, Phil was attacked by one of these, well, they are zombies. Let's not pretend they aren't. Anyhow, Phil was attacked by one of the security guards who had become a zombie, and he died because of it. I stabbed a security guard in the head with the boom mic of all things, which did kill him. But not long after that, Phil, who had died from a horrific neck wound, opened his eyes and tried to attack me as well. I had to do the same thing to Phil to put him back down. Watch out though, people. It only took Phil a few minutes to come back to life. So, here I am now, alone. And in the studio, why somebody is knocking on the studio door or wanting to come in. Doesn't surprise me, since I've seen hundreds of them wandering around the streets below. I have it barricaded pretty good, so I think I'm safe for a while. But enough about me. Let's get back to you and hear how things are going in your neck of the woods. Jessica in L.A., you're on Hunt Through the Night. How is it where you are?
That's it, good librarians, for episode number 124 of Library of the Living Dead. We're going to have a few out comments, and then you know what we're going to do. First off, I'd like everyone to join the forum at goodlibrarians.freeforums.org. Please join the forum. Please join the forum. Please join the forum. There, did that sound sad enough for you? I want people to get this thing rocking like it did before. And the only way to do that is to go to librarians.freeforums.org. Sign up and start posting. Zombie Farmer has been really wonderful in starting a whole bunch of new topics. I just love her to death. Also, we've got a Skype talk on Saturday nights starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. My name is Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R space Pus, P-U-S. You knew that, didn't you? Anyways, come and join Skype. We had a hell of a good time last time. We talked for 3.5 hours. 3.5 hours! That's a long time to talk. I went through too many beers and had a hangover the next day. It's tough having a hangover in church, if you know what I'm saying. I also want to thank Eric Lowther and Anna Lowther for the absolutely wonderful story that was presented in this episode. Eric has a hell of a voice now, doesn't he? He says he's OCD when he does these things, and I believe him. It was absolutely perfect. And thanks to Brad Z, or Brad Zeke, or Brad Zipprich, or whatever the hell he's calling himself now. It's Brad Z, I'm pretty sure, for the excellent stories that he added to this episode. Also, send zombie promos, zombie stories, long and short, and especially, please, oh please, send some letters from the dead. We need letters from the dead. There wasn't one in this episode, because we didn't have one. You already heard all the ones from the book, and I wrote the last two. So it's time for some of you to pick up the slack and write me some letters from the dead. Send them to lotld@outlook.com. Also, I just wanted you to know, I'm getting happier by the minute by being able to do the podcast again for all you good librarians. The comments have been really warmly received. You guys really rock. And now, like we usually do, we're going to go out with a song.
This dirty street by a hanging head. They say, get yourself together. Isn't that what they said? You should start walking through the city with the living dead.
to join the forum at goodlibrarians.freeforums.com. I won't beg anymore. Sorry.